And that will be diluted. The manager's control is going to be diluted and redistributed. And I don't know how he would function in an environment like that, particularly when it's being redistributed to people who I think he is extremely hostile to, both on a personal and a philosophical level. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. We will see what goes on. What I will say is we're not going to have the kind of incredible authority vested in the hands of one person that we've had before.
He seems like he's hired just about everyone who's on staff right now. And, I mean, what we've
not
got...
Not Roy Tuchman.
Well, that's true. That is the perhaps the lone dissenting voice sometimes. But it seems like, you know, we've got this new news director who's straight out of KFWB, which is, you know, pretty conservative mainstream news, and the program director who apparently you were talking to earlier in the day. And, you know, it doesn't seem like the atmosphere is very conducive to the mission statement of Pacifica.
Well, you know, not I don't know about anybody else. I think I'm banned from the station. I'm not really clear on it, so I couldn't talk really to the atmosphere in the station. But I've talked to certain staff people, and people have come to our meetings, and they basically, like David said, we get told in a sense, yeah, things are not as bad as you think they are. It's not as terrible, and there's an impression given that there's uniform hostility to the reform movement, for lack of a better name. And what the messages we get in informal communication is it's not actually that uniformly hostile. I think the people who are reading those carts on the air right now are probably very hostile, but I don't know how deep that goes. We'll see.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, those are all management. The letter that Mark Cooper keeps referring to, or a couple of letters, or Mark Cooper, Mark Shub keep referring to, as being signed by staff rejecting the local advisory board, virtually all of those people are gone.
About two-thirds of them, yeah.
So who else?
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi, Roy. Hi everybody. This is Paul from Orange County. And I just wanted to...
speak up, Paul.
Say I appreciate you having this forum. And
okay, would you speak up, Paul?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I wanted to say I really appreciate this forum. Thank you for that, Roy, and thank you for all of you coming on. And I'm looking forward to the local advisory board. I'm planning to go up to that. And I noticed somebody, I forget which one of you, Dave or David, that mentioned earlier. I had to grab a pen and wrote it out. It was, I don't know if it was exactly stated this way, but one of you said that an election sort of is like supposedly a popular mandate for what is essentially an oligarchy.
That sounds like Dave Adelson to me.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically, it gives the appearance of popular mandate, but the people who are put before the populace for a vote have been completely preselected by vast wealth. So,
right.
You know, you can. They're all. Lydia will tell you they're all different kinds of elections.
Right, and we are very just culturally conditioned to accept only Western style electoral processes. And many of us, particularly if we have traveled to other countries, realize that, for example, in indigenous communities that I've seen in Chiapas, Mexico, put our elections to shame because it's so much based more on consensus rather than on the type of, oh, I'm going to vote for a candidate that I do or do not know. I was appalled to see that a KPFA that has an activist base, that they only had a 15% turnout for their last elections, and it was 20% after last year. And considering that approximately 25%, was it Pete Branson, Dave, that said that during the meeting, about 25% is considered core, and so 15%, so there's still like a 10% there that are part of your core listeners, in other words, the ones that listen almost exclusively to KPFK, that's their first listening choice, who did not participate in elections, and we don't want that to happen in this signal area. We want to find out the whys of that, and that speaks to, again, I think, approaching it from a Western-style democratic process, electoral process. But anyway, that's why we are really welcoming all kinds of new and creative thoughts so that we can have the most inclusive process available to us for our local advisory board elections.
Also, you know, Ron Wilkins once told me, he quoted Camus to me, he said, what better way to enslave a man than to give him a vote and tell him he is free? You know, voting for your rulers is not the same as having influence over the decisions that affect you. So while local advisory board elections are important, they're just one component of a whole lot of things that have to happen so that people can have influence over the decisions that affect them. And, again, I don't consider elections co-equal with democracy.
What would either of you or any of you think, Leslie, you kind of mentioned the consensus idea. What would you all think of moving, I don't know if it would take some kind of change in the bylaws or articles of incorporation or what it would take to move more toward a structure or procedure where there would be a consensus decision-making?
Well, I mean, that's what we're doing now. What we're calling for before we even enter an electoral process is what I'm calling a plebiscite, or a sense of people giving their input as to what they want to see in elections. If you had an ideal selective process, what would it look like? And we want to hear from everybody. That's the whole point. I want to add a comments section to the ballot so that if you don't vote or if there were things that you didn't like about it, we want to know even when candidates describe themselves. For example, same thing when I looked at the KPFA list. Those weren't the things that I needed to know in order to make an informed decision. And so we want to know, what do you think? Do you want to know how people stand on the issues or how they stood on this issue in terms of the Pacifica crisis? All of those things are part of consensus, and you can only do that through really deep dialogue that we need to have with each other. So
there's another point.
And this is just the start of that, Dave.
There's another point, which is it's not just what do you think, but what work are you willing to do to support it? Because ultimately,
right,
the survival of the institution is going to depend on more than just the work of the people who are at the station or who are in certain key positions. I've often joked about how a lot of people mean by democracy that they want to vote on what work somebody else does. So part of it is also finding out what work people are willing to do and then structuring it so that they can do that work, and that their work can make a difference.
Yes, so that people feel like an ownership, because that's what I'm very curious about. I'm very curious. It's not a judgment call on the KPFA elections at all, but I want us to be able to find out why more of an activist base did not participate, and how we can get to that, and what is missing in terms of having this investment in our local station.
And that's so vital. This is Dave Fertig again. People that have been calling me, partially just, well, because of the, finally, some of this getting out on KPFK, when I talk to them, they say, well, how did this happen? How come, you say it happened years ago, well, how did it happen? And I say, well, lassitude on the part of the board, the national board, the staff, local, national, and the local advisory boards to a small degree. Thank goodness they started the ball rolling, but also the listeners. And I think that without community involvement, I mean, Pacifica is not just a movement, but it is, among other things, that. And I think that if people are involved, it will sustain, it will last through these kinds of attacks that it's inevitably going to face in this really increasingly repressive culture we're facing.
But there have to be mechanisms for that involvement, the level and
Absolutely.
The quality of it.
Can I ask you, would any of you three support, or what would you say to encourage the formation of perhaps like local affinity groups? There's a group I know that's in Orange County that's been, you know, trying to maybe get together, and this was before all of the changes that have happened in the last month, but having more of an influence for, like, us Orange County folks, you know, we're as much represented in the...
Let me say this. I brought a motion from the local advisory board to the national board asking that it actually actively support the nurturing of listener groups, such as you describe, and however they manifest in so many different ways, absolutely important.
There's one already here in L.A. It's called the Free Pacifica Neighborhood Network.
FPNN.org.
It was Ed Pearl has done an enormous amount of work on it. F, like Frank, P, like Pacifica, NN, Free Pacifica Neighborhood Network.org. And they have about 15 chapters of local groups that meet, and they encourage people to form their own chapters if there isn't one in their locality. And if you go to that website, you can see that.
They'll be forming in Orange County.
You don't have to do it under their auspices. This thing was formed by anarcho-syndicalists, right? So, you know, if you want to form a group. But there are groups around that have formed. The local organizing model has been working a lot better than earlier efforts to have single large groups the idea there was, well, the larger the group, the more the political clout. But the flip side of that is the larger the group, the less each individual person got to have an influence over what went on. And
that's
so they never lasted very long.
That's FPNN.org. Frank Paul Norman Norman.
Free Pacifica Neighborhood Network.
Oh, Free Pacifica Neighborhood Network, FPNN.org.
And also just any two or three people getting together can form a group and also come up with their own idea of how to have an autonomous formation that is still conducive to the same effort. And I know, again, as we were looking at this whole electoral process and thinking, oh, my goodness, are we going to have to come up with, like, electoral districts or whatever? The area is so enormous. And to say that Los Angeles is the city of Los Angeles, obviously our listening area is so broad and so widespread that what we are really hoping to do outreach to is all those areas that we've never even visited or seen or whatever, and hope that they can form groups. And we can certainly find people that would be happy to go and share the materials that we have with them, or they can develop their own whatever. It's a very flexible, but it can be a very invigorating and creative process as we rebuild.
Or it can be deadly dull if you go in and decide to focus on a lot of bureaucratic stuff rather than what it is you want to try and create.
Mm-hmm.
It can cut either way. It's
mm-hmm.
really up to the people who do the work.
Right.
There's a lot of work to be done, and we're all working really hard, among other things, and then not just because of the elections, but to get the transmitter going. And once we get that transmitter up and running and getting back into the huge signal area that we can really reach, and the sooner that we do that, the more effective our communication with listeners relative to the elections and to the new approach towards community involvement.
You know, they say that the dream of every flea is to someday own a dog of his own. And, you know, sometimes I have to pinch myself and wonder, is all this possibility that seems to be opening up really going to get taken advantage of? Is it? I mean, because it's easy to get carried away and dream about all the different wonderful things that can happen, and then you run smack dab into human nature and power politics again. But I, you know, I don't want to go too far in hoping, but again, if each of you who's listening to all of this right now decides to be involved, who knows?
Yeah, when people say that one side's fair and the other side's not, look at those and what they do in terms of inclusion and openness, and then make your assessment.
Okay, thanks, caller.
Thank you.
Hello, you're on the air with David Adelson and David Fertig of the local board and the national board, and Lydia Brasson of the local board.
Yeah, good evening. Sounds like Stirrings of Pacific are coming back to life. But I was just wondering, in terms of inclusion, not to be critical, but in terms of the discussion right now, are there the representation of communities of color, particularly women of color, but generally communities of color, whether it's African American or Asian or Latino or American Indian?
Yes, I am a person of color myself, Latina. And before we even started this process of consultation, just in the past week, I have spoken to maybe a dozen people in communities of color, and also people who are low income. I mean, there are all kinds of demographics that we're talking about here, but primarily that's the area in which I work, and both African American and Latinos. I mean, I always point out to people that it was radical African American programmers that ushered in the Latino programming at KPFK, and so we're very active in that area. In fact, the first few forums that we have kind of have on the horizon are in communities of color in both African American and Latino communities.
There was a community meeting that happened that was organized, I think, by the Pacifica Campaign a little while ago, that was completely in Spanish, and it was striking in that it was, in terms of content, in my opinion, I understand Spanish. I butcher the language when I try and speak it, but I can understand it, and the content was fabulous. Arturo Limas gave an outstanding history of it, but that is one of the problems when you're talking about developing elections or developing participation. If you go to somebody and you say, hey, how'd you like to get involved and try and engage in an election which will elect a representative who may or may not be able to do influence a selection to go to the national board, and then that person will be involved maybe in instructing an executive director to tell a local station manager to talk to a program director to go to someone in your community to talk about the possibility of a show. That's not really going to motivate anybody, and that is a direct problem. So again, we fall on the dependency of people like yourself who may be more involved. We've asked a lot of people to be involved. Michael Zinzin, who's with the Coalition Against Police Abuse and is also on our local board, has a wonderful quote. He said, "We won't struggle for you, but we'll struggle with you." And I think that if we can demonstrate, some of the radical black programmers who've been purged have told us outright, he said, there's a lot of wounds. There's a lot of feeling of betrayal, a lot of feeling of being burned, a lot of feeling of being marginalized, like getting the corners, but not really the main slice of time. And there, I've spoken to Mexican-American programmers and Mexican programmers, and there are Chicanos. There are concerns about that run really deep, a lot of hesitancy, a lot of suspicion. And, there's this real contradiction in Los Angeles, particularly as segregated racially as it is geographically, that is and has deep roots at KPFK, contradictions between white liberals, white progressives, and communities of color that is not going to be able to be worked out easily and is going to require a certain amount of trust. And that's one of the things that is a real potential for difficulty, because there's some history of people for example, a number of programmers of color were removed before the purge started in other circles, and people not having stood up at that time remains, I think, a very sore point. And all these subjects, it's difficult for me to talk about. It feels very touchy. Any recommendations? I would hope you'd come to meetings and talk about how it might be done, because it's really one of the crucial things to determine whether or not this is a success or just more bull.
I think that's good that it's being addressed. And I remember several of the programmers that were purged back at that time, and some of them I liked the programming, and others I felt that it wasn't. I felt there was it wasn't really in the vision of what Pacifica was about. Sometimes I felt it was very negative. I mean, there were things that happened, like they had Black Mental Liberation Weekend, which in some respects was tremendous, and in other respects was absolutely virulent and terrible. So, I think it's important to have, I think the wider variety of peoples, of communities of color and all communities, the wider variety we have, the better. The only other comment I wanted to make is that I think Pacifica misses a great source of strength when it focuses too much on politics and I'll just put it like this, head stuff, as opposed to heart and soul stuff. Now, programming for Night People, sometimes he addresses it very well because he'll have some heart and soul stuff. But during the day, a lot of times it's just a lot of head political stuff. And I think if Pacifica wants to thrive and grow strong, it would do well to address more cultural and soul material for the human being, because that's really where our strength comes from. And there used to be programs like that. Some addressed it better than others.
Well, that...
I remember the old shows with Ed Asner and everything. I mean, there was some great art. Let me just jump in real quick, because I that's something that's really important to me. And I value the political and the public interest and the role, as you call it, head stuff. But, when we look at the mission of Pacifica, so often people skip over Section C, where it says, to provide outlets for the creative skills and energies of the community, to conduct classes and workshops, and to establish scholarships for creative writing, to offer performance facilities to amateur musicians and groups, and to promote that. And I think that's vital. And I think you teach a lot and learn a lot through those, as much as you do through direct lecture. I mean, more, I should say, indeed. And through humor and art and expression locally, in Washington and Houston, they've got great music. But look, I mean, that's wonderful, but it's commercially made music by and large. It's not locally made stuff. Although it's got to be good radio and engaging. We can't just be, it's not a public access station, for goodness sakes, much as some would claim that that's what's being sought. But I think that you're very right, and we need to focus on culture as well as cerebral.
It should also be a place where people want to come be, you know, come down and be in, because
it used to be a hangout years ago.
Well, I mean, you want it to you want it to be a place where there's things happening that are that you feel like you. I mean, Lou Hill wrote about this, the sense of direct human performance for an audience. I mean, there may be a lot of individuals in the audience, but that sort of direct human connection that happens between people, he wanted to cultivate that on the air, in part because that's how you get to know, you know, your community.
And one of the things that we've missed is having KPFK go out to the community, where there have been huge, wonderfully crafted events that are grassroots events that involve culture and strong politics that have not been covered by KPFK that used to be.
I remember that.
Yeah, well, you're out in the community and you can feel the energy. You have to have that, so it's more than just going to the station, which we urge everybody to do, but also for KPFK to be out in the community. I mean, that's huge. We miss it, those of us that experienced it initially, and it should have been far more, and we certainly hope that it will be.
So you said, you mentioned you remember what specifically, I mean, if you think back on the events that meant something to you, what would you say it was?
It could be simple things of, there was one reporter who was, he was an African-American man, unfortunately, was killed, and I don't remember his
Michael
name.
Michael Taylor.
Yeah. He was for real, and you could tell the depth of his commitment in the sound of his voice and in the kinds of stories that he covered.
You know how he got killed? He was involved in trying to set up a micro radio station because KPFK couldn't accommodate what he wanted to do or wouldn't, and he got in with some people who were, you know, basically a power struggle over a little transmitter, and he was... I don't even want to describe how he was killed, but it was
So I remember him, and I would, and just as the woman who just spoke said,
Lydia
said, I mean, there's a great potential of broadcasting on site from cultural events where you may hear music or just people's voices, you know, whether it be a poet speaking or just people actually speaking. I think that is a incredibly vital source of energy for fulfilling the Pacifica vision. It can be way beyond the walls of the station itself.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Hello, you're on the air with David Adelson, Lydia Brasson, and David Fertig.
Hi, this is Danny. I called a while ago to you, and Roy, you recommended the Yoga Back book. I still haven't gotten it, but I'm going to get it. In any case, I've been listening to this. This is fascinating. One thing I was interested in, because of my background in the business of quality control and quality assurance, is what I do for a living, what I've done all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that it would be really a good idea to put into place not only the wherewithal for actually getting the elections to take place, but a way of checking up on ourselves.
Yeah.
Say, you know, okay, what have we accomplished?
Yep.
And where have we dropped the ball?
Yeah.
And then that's, you know, the finding the cause of whatever problems there are, and then a corrective action to say, well, you know, what are the creative steps we can take to make sure that, you know, instead of blaming people for what's happened in the past, to come up with a new way of doing things so that the same problems that we've had in the past don't come up again?
One of the fundamental problems has been that if you're talking about making decisions based on civic values, you know, civic, political, personal, cultural values, as opposed to the ratings and the money as the dominant decision-making tool, then when you've got a bunch of people and an ethic to have a diverse place, then when there's differences about civic values or the impact of certain programming, the value of them, How do you resolve those differences? I think in all of non-commercial radio, because, by the way, we've been talking about Pacifica tonight, but this sort of reformulation of non-commercial radio is something that's been happening throughout non-commercial radio since at least the mid-1980s, through all the stations that Pacifica, in a sense, is the grandfather of. It had happened there first in a largely stereotypic process. And one of the big problems is when you've got fundamentally different civic values, how do you resolve them in a way that everybody feels strongly about the outcome rather than, all right, I'm going to war, or I'm going to fight this back, or no, it shouldn't have been like that, or if I could get rid of that. So I've been wanting to see a kind of mission rating, which is a really kind of a quality control job. It's how do you distinguish quality? What are your standards? And particularly if you're dealing with people with different perspectives, different backgrounds, different core values, and sometimes directly contradictory core values, then how do you arbitrate that in a way that people feel is fair? And I would like to see a mission rating where the listeners themselves, and this is one of the things I was talking about going beyond elections, are regularly involved in that evaluation. And one of the jobs of the station or the station advisory board is to accumulate that feedback in a way that it's not just anecdotes. Because when the things started to change radically in the mid-90s, people would scream, oh, they're mainstreaming it. But one person's mainstream is another person's hard left. And the argument was totally done on the basis of anecdotes. And Larry Bensky once said, the plural of anecdote is not data. So I don't know if you'd be willing to help be involved in thinking about how to evaluate quality and how to do it for different groups and individuals, but that would be a wonderful thing if you've got some...
I am interested, as a matter of fact, and I think I've got an answer for you right now. You said, how do you go ahead and deal with people with different ethnic values, different political values? And I think the answer is gently.
Yeah. God, you know, it's been a while since we've seen gentleness at the radio station.
Well, I guess my point is basically that if you can put together a system, not all at once, but piece by piece, slowly, find, you know, if you can take, six shots and three of them land in the hot zone, well, hey, you've accomplished something, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that say, for example, putting together a system eventually that's going to give everybody a chance to be heard eventually is a viable thing. If someone says to themselves, oh, well, I've got to put my itinerary forward now, otherwise it will never be heard, then that's when people are really going to come to loggerheads, I think. But if there's a certain amount of leeway and openness so that we say, well, we're going to try it this way this time, and we're going to come back together and see and talk to each other again about this.
Sir, what's your name?
It's Danny.
Danny, where were you this weekend at the board meeting? We needed you.
I know. I'm sorry. Unfortunately, I'm unemployed right now and desperately looking for a job.
Well, the next national board meeting, I don't know if we've discussed this already, is coming up to Southern California. I keep saying Los Angeles, and I'm not supposed to. According to my own rules, I'm supposed to say Southern California. But we'll be in the L.A. area March 8th, 9th, and 10th.
Cool.
Well, it's going to be a lot of work, and it'll be a lot of interesting things going on.
8th, 9th, and 10th. Well, I'm sure I'll be able to find out exactly what the location is and so forth. And I'm sure we'll figure out
where it's going to be ourselves soon.
If it's at all possible, I want to be at the meeting on the 19th. I'm going to say something that may not be in agreement with everybody else, but my Father in Heaven always looks out for me no matter where I go and no matter what I do, and so if I'm supposed to be there, then he'll give me the $3 to park my car there.
There's street parking also available. You'll be able to find some easily, I think, right across the street.
I mean,
check the signs, make sure.
Could somebody rattle off the location on that again?
Okay, that's going to be at Loyola Law School this Saturday, starting at 1 p.m.
The doors open at 12 now.
Doors open at 12. There, if you're unemployed, there'll be food and refreshments.
Even if you're not.
And if you're not unemployed. And the Loyola Law School, 1441 West Olympic Boulevard, 1441 West Olympic Boulevard, in the Burns Building Student Lounge.
It's between Alvarado and Figueroa.
Between Alvarado and Figueroa, parking
right.
$3. I went to Loyola Law School, as a matter of fact,
cool.
for a semester before I saw that I did not want to be in the law.
Yeah, well, I went to St. Ignatius when I was a kid, and I found I didn't want to stay there all my life either.
Well, I went to People's College of Law right near Alvarado in Wilshire, and I'm glad I did.
Oh, well, I'm glad I went to Loyola. It was a good experience. It was a good school.
Actually. There's a lot of learning to be done here, too, in this process, and that's why with experience like Lydia's is so extraordinary with her international experience, but we need input from everybody in this process, early and often. Like voters in Chicago, vote early, vote often.
That's right. Whether you're dead or not.
Okay, well, thank you, caller.
Thank you very much, and keep up the good work. I appreciate everything everyone's doing there. This is a breath of fresh air. Thank you so much. And, Roy, I listen to your show more than anybody else's, and it makes me...
Makes you unemployed.
No. I only do it when I can get away with it, you know. And so it's like, oh gee, I hope I can make enough money on this next contract so that I can hang around and listen to Roy for a while, you know.
Roy, you're a bad influence.
Or better yet, get set up to tape it.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Hey, well, modern technology, what a novel concept, eh?
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good night.
Okay, well, I think we'll take one more call and let everybody go to bed except moi. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm sorry I have a speech problem, but I've been volunteering at KPFK since 79, and this is the second time this has happened, as a lot of good shows have dropped off, and Roy's has been the one that's kept the station together. And I'm glad for that. And he's the reason I donate.
Fantastic.
He's the one that keeps the station what it is. He's the only one that really feels the mission statement. And I knew Michael Taylor, and he was a wonderful man. And they've lost a lot of good people. And I say thank God for Roy, and I hope you people keep it up, because this station could have gotten so great. I mean, it's become almost like a kindergarten. I feel like I'm listening to PBS, and I know that I'm sorry about my speech. I didn't mean to become disabled, but I volunteered there before I was.
It's what you're saying. It's not how you're saying it. Keep on.
There were some marvelous programs on, and they weren't only one-sided. And everybody had their chance, and it was... Everybody had their chance to say their say, but they also were interceded fairly. It was fair. It wasn't just one person's opinion. And it wasn't, I mean, I remember the first strike. I remember when it happened during Michael Dell's time. And this is the second time, and thank God for Roy. That's all I've got to say is thank God for Roy. I'm glad Amy's back on. And I just want the station to be back like it was again. And have the same integrity and intelligence, and the same diversity of opinions, and for all of us, not just for those few people that have one agenda. And thank you, Roy.
Well, thank you, and you know, I think I speak for everybody. I mean, I was talking about the lassitude that led us to this point. Listeners like you and all the other listeners out there, I mean, don't believe a word we say. Come and make sure that we do what we say we're going to do.
Yeah.
Don't just trust. Help us make sure that we get through with this.
One of the things that was really important in the early going, that really got ripped apart was this culture of people who were just around the station and knew what was going on, just because they saw it. And so I hope that, I mean, she mentioned that this has happened once before. Whenever Pacific is doing what it's supposed to do, which is really opening up people's minds to and hearts to fundamentally different possibilities and helping them connect with each other. Like, I remember all the letters in 96-7 of people who wrote in who talked about how, you know, when they first heard a Pacifica broadcast, they knew they weren't alone with some of the thoughts or feelings they were having about the world that weren't represented to them anywhere else. But whenever it starts to do that, it's a threat of sorts. And it's also worth more just in strict financial terms than it can probably defend itself against. You know, I mean, it's almost too valuable for its own good. So, again, the people listening can't just depend on other folks to do it, even if it sounds good, you know, oh, you're doing great things. We're as liable to screw up as anybody, so all hands on deck.
Okay, well, anybody else wants to include some closing words before we move on? David Pertig, Lydia Brasson.
See you Saturday. Let's hope to see everybody on. Yeah, you have to wake me up for. No, it's to see everyone on Saturday. Please come with your ideas and join us. So we can't wait to meet everybody.
I'd just like to say that for all, as good sounding as it all is, doesn't mean that when you come with ideas that we'll immediately be able to figure out how to make it all work. And what Danny said is slowly and patience are going to be the biggest part. People got to stick with this a little while to make it work.
Right, and the only thing that, I mean, what we're committing to is listening, and I think that's like huge steps forward if we can listen to each other. And that's what we hope to start as a process.
Yeah, never pass up an opportunity to keep your mouth shut.
Wish I'd learned that a long time ago.
I think that's a good note to finish on.
Yes, I think so.
Thanks a lot, Roy.
Thank you, Roy.
Thanks a lot.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. It was an honor. And we have been talking with David Adelson, who's chairman of the local advisory board, and Lydia Brasson, who's on the local advisory board and whose job it is to help set up the structures for elections. You vote for the members of the local advisory board. And David Fertig of the local advisory board, who was made the national board representative from Southern California. And the meeting they're talking about is not only, of course, the national board meeting is in March in the Los Angeles area. The big machas will be here in March. But the next meeting of the KPFK local advisory board will be this Saturday, January 19th, from 1 to 2:45 p.m. at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles. The meeting will include a report back from the first in-person meeting of the interim Pacifica National Board just finished in New York City. Immediately following the local board meeting, from 2:45 to 4:30, will be the first in a series of neighborhood community consultation gatherings to discuss election-binding plebiscite proposals for the local advisory boards. How are we going to do this? And what advice do you have? Doors open at noon. Loyola Law School, 1441 West Olympic Boulevard in Los Angeles, at the Burns Building Student Lounge between Alvarado and Figueroa. Parking is $3. So you enter the parking at South Albany Street. Food, refreshments, information tables. The website they mentioned for the local groups is FPNN, the Free Pacifica Network Neighborhood, FPNN.org. If you want to get involved in one of the many and growing number of local Pacifica groups that are forming throughout Southern California. And that information will be at the KPFK switchboard tomorrow and also shortly after sunrise at somethingshappening.com, which is, I just checked, and it is back in operation. We had a year change problem, but it's fixed. So any of the details you can get at somethingshappening.com, no apostrophe, shortly after sunrise. And you are listening to Something's Happening on KPFK Los Angeles, featuring Dynamite Radio for Night People, Monday through Thursday, midnight to 6 a.m. this morning, the beginning of this morning, celebrating the elimination of the gag rule, letting you in on what's going on and letting you in on helping us to create what will be going on at KPFK and Pacifica Radio.